Oh. How was the party yesterday, by the way? Oh. Thanks for coming, by the way. Were you on a party or not? Yes, you were. Okay, brave guys. Thanks so much. Good morning. Yes. So, a couple of words about the session, of course. I have to introduce myself, even though you've been on the session before. And if you weren't, of course, that's why the introduction is needed. So, a couple of words about the session, about myself, and about what we're going to talk about today. So, I really feel sorry for one thing at the beginning, because this session is quite technical. So, I hope you had a really cup of coffee. Good, guys. Coffee, very good. I see that you guys have coffee. Great. So hopefully you're gonna enjoy it. A couple of words, of course. My name is Paula Januszkiewicz. I am from Poland, and I am the Enterprise Security MVP. I'm also the penetration tester. Pretty much security passionate. Pretty much, of course, security is also my work. So that's what I do every day. And I do have, as I was mentioning even before, got access to the source code of Windows. And this is very useful, not to make really the dangerous things, but to help to understand how certain things in operating systems are working. Because security, without understanding, of course, will never exist. So this is my background. And of course, if it's about the company that I work in, the company is called Secure. It's a small company. It's a group of 8 people. So we are a very small team. We are divided into different places. We've got an office in New York, Warsaw, where I come from, and also at a pretty exotic place, which is Dubai, which is also very enjoyable. So this is basically myself. Security is something that I like a lot, so you will find it within the presentation, especially within this one, that I'm quite a boring person, and you will definitely feel it because I am the person that really likes to dig in into different things. So hopefully we're going to share the same passion. That's the first thing. And second thing is that the session is going to be about a pretty interesting subject, which is related to searching for information in operating system, different kinds of, especially the ones that are after the certain, well, crime, and particularly cybercrime. So first question in the morning, warm me up, who watches CSI? Okay, I see like 15% of you. CSI is a pretty geeky series of episodes, of course. And what the reference is, of course, is the crime scene investigation. So I call the session CSI Windows, and the reason why it's like this is because there is a crime that happened, and we are about to investigate the leftovers. What are they about, and if we are, and if we do have any chance to find out any particular information. So it's going to be like that. First of all, if you watch CSI, I'm sure that you noticed that CSI, it's a series of episodes that are very richly divided into different kinds of commercials. So it's more commercials that maybe you even watch rather than the whole episode itself. In my sessions, there will be no commercials. But we're going to, of course, talk about the different crime-related activities. So this is basically that. The session is also called of the cause of the unexpected system takeover, because what happened is hacker get inside, and now we are about to investigate the whole thing. The inspiration of the session was very simple. Actually, I participated recently in another project that was really interesting. That was a pretty big company related with finance. And what happened to their network is that basically someone got inside and a couple of things get broken. And what they experience the fall of the whole domain. Of course, we could be discussing, yeah, we got a backup, it's not a problem. We had this like this, we could recover, blah, blah, blah. Okay, not for these guys. So they were kind of worried about if everything is still okay within the network. You know how it is with malware. When you get a malware and you feel really that you remove it, the best removal is to reinstall operating system, because sometimes we may skip this tiny one thing and skip this tiny another thing, and these things is going to activate whatever in 6 months, yes? So you never know. Of course, we can sit and spend a whole week on that, but still, do we really remove it or not yet? So this is pretty much the situation that they experienced. So they called us, and we came, and they're like, no, so we would like you to investigate if there are some leftovers, and we would like you to tell us what happened. Because that for the fact that all of the domain controllers have fallen, we already know that. But now we would like to know why. And I'm like, no problem. Let's have a look in the memory dumps. Do you have any dumps of the machines that were basically crashed? And they're like, no, we don't. Should we? And I'm like, oh. The reason obviously why it's like this is because if they made any kind of dumps, the disk dumps, the memory dumps, as we discussed yesterday, we would have something to work on. I mean, I would say this is the best consultancy job that you can ever get. You go to the customer, customer pays for your time, you get into the site, and there is nothing to do. So this was pretty much like that. But of course, they had one dump somewhere, someone was too so happy to actually make it. So this was the starting point of our small analysis. And we were able, of course, successfully, it was a really long project, to discover what was happening. So this session is pretty much inspired by that. And what I'll be actually showing you, and that's going to be part of the session as well, is the very interesting type of tool that we wrote. It took us, unfortunately, about six months to write it, because it was a lot of research. I'm sure that you know that whenever, and particularly within the Windows XP, you were able to modify the content of the event logs, because the format was EVT, not like since Windows Vista, EVTX. This X, well, it means that things are XMLized, but unfortunately, whenever it's about editing the EVTX files, it's not that easy as for EVT. So Windows XP, EVT, you can find a lot of tools in the internet that can remove the certain log entries from the logs. So if the hacker comes in and he runs some certain processes, yes, he can be like, I don't want this, 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 that, that, that. Okay, what about EVTX? Nah, it's not that easy. Because there's a lot of signing, a lot of security within the file, but unfortunately, everything is doable. As you probably know, as I said, I'm from Poland. Polish people are kind of stubborn always. They're like, we gotta do it, whatever, yes? And they're gonna spend like 6 months on doing things. Not that it doesn't really mean anything, not that it has no business value, yes? But they are stubborn, and direction is already taken, yes? And if they're gonna resign, it's gonna be humiliation, yes? It's a little bit like that. I don't know. I don't get me wrong. I really like my nation. But sometimes they do have their own disadvantages. Okay. So, tools. Tools. Of course, all of the tools, as I said, and this is the standard thing, after this session, you will find also the tools that are in the tools webpage. Yesterday, I uploaded a couple of new ones that we are not even talking about, quite interesting ones. Of course, the one thing, just to repeat very quickly, do not run on the production environment the tools with the raccoon's icon, okay? And the tool that I'm going to show you today has the raccoon icon. So basically, this is pure danger, and use them only for the, of course, educational purpose. I don't want to be responsible for any infrastructure damage, and I will not be receiving any calls like, Paula, you are a nightmare. You broke our infrastructure. I don't want to hear that, okay? So, next thing we're going to talk about, of course, first of all, is the live analysis of the situation, and then these operating system mechanisms that we can use to investigate this and that. So it is a very much flow within the session, so we are starting, surprise, surprise, from the beginning. And let's talk about one piece of theory, which is going to be the preserving evidence. First of all, what about preserving evidence? If you do have a situation, of course, that someone got inside, you kind of don't know, you kind of feel maybe that someone get inside, there are two approaches that we can take. Either we evaluate that from the business perspective, it's not that important, could be, generically describing the situation, or you evaluate it that this is actually business from the business perspective important, and then it's better actually to give it to the legal case. Because such things, this is the crime that someone made, obviously, yes? It wasn't like, you know, 20 years ago. This was my husband's time. My husband is a little bit older, and I'm really jealous about his past, because he used to be a hacker on the bedside, and he was doing all the things with completely, like, law was not there. So he could, like, replace someone's web page, do this, and he was having fun. Pure, I mean, happy life. And then, of course, when people start to become more aware about hacks, security, and so on, the law came to the field. And now, to get inside someone's infrastructure is, whoa, yes, this is a crime. So this was basically a little bit like that. Anyway, what I'm saying is that whenever we are making this kind of investigation, we need to think about how we are able to preserve the evidence. And obviously, very obvious comment, we work on a copy, not on the source, because any kind of changes that we are making may affect the result of work. One tiny thing to mention. Whenever you see anything that is running on a certain operating system, the good advice and good tip always is, do not kill that stuff. Make a dump, make a memory dump. If you haven't been on the memory dump session that I was delivering yesterday, watch it, of course, online. There is a technique given how to make the memory dump of the certain operating system using the dump it tool. And then investigate it. The reason why I'm saying this, because there is a lot of malware that whenever you close it, whenever you kill it, at that moment, they're going to do something bad. When they run, everything is fine, till you actually kill them. So this is a good practice always to take. Don't change environment, like monitor it, have a look, but don't really change anything. Of course, from the memory dump perspective, either we can make just a snapshot of the virtual machine, export it somewhere, and then analyze it on the side. Either, of course, we can use the tools like Dumpit that I mentioned. Either next session after me, it's Mark Rusinovich speaking. This is his tool that is called Disk to VHD. You can also image the drive and then save the VHD, of course, somewhere on the external source. So preserving evidence, also for you, for education, for from legal perspective, is always a wise thing. Do you know what? This was really funny because when I was talking to these guys at the customer side, the ones that responded they don't have any kind of dumps made and any kind of evidence is just not there, the first question I asked, okay guys, well, that was maybe inappropriate question in a situation. You don't kick the lying person, yes? But I asked the question, do you have any kind of incident response procedures in place? And they were like, obviously not. So incident response procedure, it can be one or two pages document. And if you don't have such in your organization, it would be really wise to create it. Because in a case of emergency, when your servers are on fire, you are like, what to do? What am I supposed to do? Call the police? I mean, really? Imagine. Good morning, sir. How can I help you? Computer. Uh-huh. So, sorry for laughing a little bit and being ironic, but it's probably going to be like that. Okay, and eventually, we can always make a backup and revert back the past events. Okay, guys, so let's go on to the practical things. So whenever we are doing the discovery, we need to, at the beginning, do the basic terrain orientation. And what do I mean by this? It's actually a very good thing. Let me run one tool. This tool is called OS Forensics. And basic terrain orientation, it is very much, let me begin. It is very much about what kind of stuff we've got within our operating system. And regardless, of course, it can be an operating system that is, in our case, managed, not managed, it doesn't really matter. It might be, for example, the VHD drive. It may be, for example, the live machine, because this is just the pure situation about what kind of stuff we've got. Okay, so basically, I got here the possibility to scan the certain drive. Actually, let me rerun it because it did not read my drive correctly. So let me do this one more time. Okay, and now it should be fine. Very good. OS Forensics, what kind of tool is this? Is this free? It's not free, but, and again, it's not very expensive. For now, I think that the price is about $400. And again, don't get me wrong, I'm not advertising anything. It's just a very nice tool. So, and it has all of the features that we would like to have at the very beginning. When we go to the system information, we can scan the certain drive. And I'm going to, for example, scan the X drive and go. And it will give me the information about, well, for example, at the very beginning, what kind of user I've got over here. So I got administrator, guest, user one, user two, and so on. I got eventually some account hacker. What I'm saying is that hacker obviously will not the account behind him. Well, he can, but then we are not really facing the hacker's approach, but someone else's approach, yes? Hacker will not leave such stuff, but maybe he would. So this is the first thing to check always. If you review this tool, I mean, in my session, it's not about tool, I'm sorry. You can have a look at the tool. There is a trial version available. You can see what kind of information you can get. But we are able to investigate, for example, registry changes, file changes, stuff that I was showing yesterday about the NTFS journal. So we can read the information from NTFS journal, what kind of files were changed, yes? From NTFS journal, not from the metadata, of course, because as remember, that might be changed by the hacker, and so on and so on. So this is a pretty useful thing, but we cannot expect, as I said, that the hacker will leave actually the accounts behind. So what else we can do? This is a pretty nice tool. And as you see, we can, of course, memory viewer, registry viewer, file system viewer, and so on. It's kind of like, we can say, not very like professional, because professional person will run the debugger and do everything within the debugger. No. This is a very good tool. And if we don't have time to play with a debugger, we can always play with this because someone wrote it. So this is always the approach. Very simple tool. So this is one approach, and we can analyze the operating system information. Is there anything left that is quite obvious? Okay. Another thing, so let's start from the kind of light level, it is basically to check out what kind of connections we've got established. And one of the very useful commands is obviously netstat. And again, it's like netstat, it's so easy. Well, yes, but netstat will show you if there's any kind of process ID that is left that is communicating with the hacker to the outside. Could be also like that. So netstat minus ANO, it is actually showing us the status of the connection, and combining with this, let me go to the top, combining with this process identifier. And this is really nice, because you are able, of course, in a pretty short, nice looking list, to investigate what kind of communication with who is basically established. Another thing to mention, and again, very basic terrain orientation. It is the command ipconfig. And it's like, oh no, she's going with ipconfig. This is getting very bad. No. Display DNS. Display DNS. And what do we have over here? It's where the hacker was communicating, what kind of IP addresses and the names, of course, hacker was using. So this is something that we can have a look. How long this is valid? Depends on the DNS settings, yes? So if hacker was communicating with his own domain somewhere, and is this domain expires in 1 minute, obviously this information will not be there. So we can't really rely on that, but maybe not. And within the CSI, if you watch the episodes, you clearly know, it's always about the bad guys are better, the good guys are better. The bad guys are better, the good guys are better. And it's always like that. That's why when the tension is, yes? So hacker can be smarter, but then you are like, but I know more. And he's like, no, but over that, I know more. So it's always like this. Maybe we're going to end up with some winning or losing, but at least research is, of course, interesting. So we are able to see what kind of IP addresses we've got. And of course, the last thing, of course, to mention is whenever hacker was communicating with the internal computers, we've got also commands like RRP minus A. And this is very easy, I don't want to show it. So RRP minus A, what is also interesting, is that it lasts for 2 minutes, RRP cache lasts for 2 minutes, and if you don't renew it, it lasts for another 10 minutes. So you don't have much time, that's what I'm saying. So this is like tiny commands we've got that can help us to understand the whole situation and do the basic terrain research. So connections, eventually cache and RRP cache, eventually some groups, the new groups, new accounts, and eventually if we do have any kind of new processes that we completely don't know where it comes from. Sounds basic, right? But here comes the next thing. How else, and what is the next stuff that we are able to investigate? The typical traces, whenever we are talking about that kind of investigation, are a little bit more interesting. So obviously, the nice approach is always to review the logs. And I'm not saying that we should not rely on the event logs. No, we should. Event logs are very good. As that's what I said, 6 months, and we were really struggling. We were giving up couple of times in a way. Finally, we are like, I'm like, see, Polish blood. I'm really stubborn always. I'm like, no. We have to do this. Everybody was like, oh no, we hate her. We hate her. But after we did it, it was like, cool, nice pink tool. And that was doing a very bad stuff. So At the end, of course, we are able to review logs, and in general, and very much, we should rely on those. But there's a little bit more things that are delivered by Windows Explorer that we should definitely take in part. So first of all, the question is to you, what is within ntuser.dat? User Hive. Yes, exactly. The current user. Yes. So this is the, well, the user hive, exactly. So we find it in the user's profile. So this is nothing but a registry hive of the certain user. If the user, of course, deletes the profile, then ntuser.dat goes away. We can still search for the disk traces if we are able to find such information, but this is basically what we've got. In the registry, though, there's a little bit more things about the user itself. For example, in the registry, we've got something that is called the profile history. So if someone deletes the profile but forgets about the profile history, I will show you everything in a moment, then you are able to see the trace that, yeah, this profile was there. I still don't know anything, but at least I know this. And we can move forward. Of course, we do have a couple of other things, like run dialog. Run dialog is Windows plus R, yes? If hacker was using run at some point, then we are able to see the history of such things as well. Of course, any other things like MRU, so most recent reuse, the Microsoft Management Console, if he was using it for something. We are also able to make a memory dump and grab the history of the executed commands, and so on and so on. So there is plenty of things we can really search, as long as, of course, we do have an evidence. If not, then obviously not. Prefetch is a very interesting place, because prefetch is the history of what kind of executables were executed within the certain operating system. And this is global. It's totally independent from the user perspective. Let's dig in. So, typical traces, what kind of stuff we can find. So let me bring to life my virtual machine. And let's move, of course, to the demo area, and let's find out what kind of typical traces we can find within the operating system. So, very good. Let me dig in. And I'm coming in with my machine. Perfect, perfect, perfect. Yes. So, view, full screen, and we're going to spend the whole session almost over there. So, what kind of stuff do we see over here? First of all, I got, of course, different kinds of scripts over here. One of the scripts, it's called CSI Basics. Let me enlarge it. Every analysis that I'm going to do is going to be actually in PowerShell. So again, PowerShell power comes to the field. If it's about the script itself, the tools that I mentioned, you will find this in the scripts folder on the website. Yes? So just enjoy, just watch, and then you can practice the same things at home, okay? So let me explain everything. First of all, the very basic search we can make, either we can find the tool that's going to do the same stuff for us, but what I will do, I will simply list the user profiles from the disk. So if there is some leftover from the profile perspective, then I'm always able to search for that. And effectively, we see that we've got stuff like admin administrator, Freddy Krueger, and some profile that is public. This guy, by the way, it's a good guy. It's just an unfortunate name and surname correlated together. One more thing. We can, of course, list also the profile seats from the registry. And this is a pretty interesting research. So here, what I'm listing, if you have a look, I'm listing the profile list. Yes. So this is Windows, Microsoft Windows NT current version profile list. Okay, let's dig in and let's see what kind of stuff we've got. And this is quite interesting, isn't it? Because some of the profile seats are kind of longer. And when we compare it with the previous list, like we see over here, admin, administrator, Freddy Krueger, public, which ones are the ones that I created? Admin, possibly, and Freddy Krueger, it's not a built-in Windows account. Yes, that would be kind of cool, by the way, but no. So anyway, so these are the ones. So over here, what we are able to see, of course, are related identifiers of the different kinds of accounts, while the long ones are actually built-in operating system ones. For example, local system accounts has its own profile as well. It's in C Windows System 32 config, and then it's within the system profile. And it also saves its own data over there, like caching information, app data, for example. It has its own stuff over there. So this is basically what we see. This looks quite confusing, but not really. So, nice thing is that we can display the profile folders from the registry. If you delete the profile, this is something that is a leftover. Ta-da, first sign. If the hacker was smart enough, he would go over there and he would delete that entry as well. But let's see if he did. And apparently, we've got a little bit more information that he didn't. So there was something. Was something. Can we read information from his profile? Completely not. Can we see what he did? Maybe from Prefetch. And that's basically it. So what kind of stuff we are able to investigate? Maybe this is a good trace. Maybe we should search a little bit further. So let's have a look. First of all, let me show you things that we are able to list from the run dialog, MMC, and so on. Let's do this quickly because this is just a simple information that in our case, in the presentation, is not really leading us anywhere. But of course, I would like to show you how to do that. So in case of run, what you see is the history, of course. That's why whenever you go to run a dialog, what is happening, you are able to see all of the commands. This is coming from anywhere but registry. There is one thing, of course, that I'm always following when I'm doing this kind of analysis. And maybe sounds very simple, but again, operating system, when you shut it down, is just a bunch of files, isn't it? So all of the files, when you turn it on, start to correlate and cooperate with each other. So whenever we are doing analysis, and when we are thinking about the data is stored somewhere, it's gonna be 100% in some kind of file, in some kind of way written to the disk. That's why the approach always simplifies the analysis, and we are not expecting unexpected. So traces is gonna be somewhere within the some things that we can touch, because that's how operating system works. So we can also, of course, search for the MMC history. Here we go. And we've got Event Viewer, Dev Management, and a couple of other things. We can also search for the information that was in Paint. So if hacker was an artist, he could, during the hack, paint some picture. Why not? Like, win paint, maybe some paint, leave it as a gift. Thank you for allowing me to get in, or something like that. And so this is something that we can also see. And Paint, as the software, also has its own cache. That very much depends on how software is written, yes? Because if we don't want to store this kind of information, and we are relying in such case also on Windows Explorer, then we will not find anything in the registry. Okay, guys. So, of course, recent files, the same type, the same story, and that allows us to display the folders that were accessed recently, and the files and types of files that were accessed recently. So as we see, of course, all of the shortcuts that we've got. Okay, so let's dig in into something concrete. First of all, I'm gonna check out if I do have a prefetch enabled. Why this is important? Ta-ta-ta-ta! Because within the SSD drive, prefetch is disabled by default. So if you want to trace what is happening in operating system from the executable's perspective, prefetch is the place to turn on. And you know, it's kind of funny because, as I said, I'm always quite ironic. So whenever you go to this kind of forums, different kinds of IT-related geeky forums, you're like, how to this kind of cheap tips and tricks things, how can I tune my computer and speed up this and that? And then you've got these perfect advices. One of the advices that is happening very often, if you want to free the disk space, clean the prefetch. Well, it gives you about 10 megabytes. Thanks for the good tip. So don't do that. Of course, in a case of emergency, you can always check in and see what kind of stuff we were running. Let's check if the prefetch in this machine is turned on. Where we do this? In the, of course, control set in the registry, in the local machine, control, session manager, memory management, prefetch parameters. And if it's gonna be number 3, like you see, that means it's turned on. remember, by default on the SSD drives, it's not turned on. Turn it on. It doesn't hurt. And it will give you a little bit more information about what is running in your operating system. That helped us once, by the way, in a very particular situation that was the last trace that we had, and we were able to see that, this thing was running on this computer. Okay, so let's take the analysis that is dependent on this thing. So that was really helpful. So let's begin. We've got, of course, and we are able to check if the prefetch contains files. That's not a big deal because prefetch is just a Windows folder, yes? As you see, we are getting to the prefetch directory, and then we are listing all the stuff. So this is the history of things, when and how, and you see, I mean, even from the past, how I was running them. Of course, it's growing, but at some point, there is a really limited amount of the executables that you run in the operating system. It's not that you every day run a new executable. It's not like that. So this is something that allows you to maintain the history of things that were running in the operating system. Very good. So now we are able to analyze it. We can, of course, have a look. And we can check the prefetch, well, within the conditions that, for example, are related with running the different kinds of hacking tools. Let's say Mimikatz, it's so popular. Let's use that. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to run the for each, of course, file in the prefetch. That is starting with the Mimikatz. Display me the information about the prefetch, how many times the Mimikatz was running, with what kind of DLLs were loaded, and so on, what kind of conditions were for this file to run, and so on. What am I using over here? This is a PF64 tool. And again, unfortunately, I'm really sorry to say it, in forensics, to get the good tool, you need to pay for it. Eek. Yes? Sometimes, of course, we've got amazing tools like Volatility and a couple of other different kinds of Python scripts. But if you want to achieve something, either you write your own tool, either you pay for it. Unfortunately, it's like that. This particular tool is actually the tool that you get from tzworks.net website, or .org, something like that, tzworks. And David, who is the owner of the company, is actually writing a very good tool. So you will find over there, I mean, in my opinion, it's the best repository of this kind of tiny, tiny cute tools that do the magic. And PF, it's the tool that you use for analyzing prefetch. So this is basically really, really simple thing. If it's about the price, of course, you need to check on the website, but all of the tools are about $100. So just to wrap it up in one thing. So let's see what kind of stuff we can analyze with the prefetch. And of course, I got two Mimikatz runs, that's why I've got two consoles open. And I'm able to see, for example, how many times this particular Mimikatz was running, what kind of DLLs were loaded, how long was it, what about this file particularly, last run was when, so we are able to investigate it like that. Very cool. And by the way, it's not per user, it's global. So turn it on. Sometimes it may really save our situation. Okay, and of course the other one, it's pretty much the same, so it's not a big thing, yes? Directories map and all of the other information. So this is a pretty nice research. Okay, guys, but let's dig in into the, how I call it, meat. So what we're going to play with also is the history of the terminal services. So if at some point hacker was establishing a connection somewhere with someone, we're able to find this information, obviously. So let's see. I'm going to, of course, list from the registry the sessions, and this is for my current profile. And we don't have anything. I am running right now the administrator's account, and I mean, there is nothing in my profile, so nobody really was connecting from my account. But what we can also do, we can list the history of the connections from all of the other users. From all of the other users. So we can do this like this. And let's do that. Click. And then we are able to see clearly that from one of the accounts, there was actually one connection made, and this was Freddy. So we are like, dee-doo-dee-doo-dee-doo. Hi, Freddy. Were you connecting to the 10.10.2.10? And he's like, no, I don't even know how to do that. Could be. I will tell you one case. On another project, we had a case of administrator, and he was using Daemware to administer, of course, and to administer, it's a very positive word, explains everything. To have a look, what people are doing. And because he was using the administrative session that does not require approval, he was actually watching what people are doing. And you could tell this from his laptop's log that he was using sessions on a certain computers. This was particularly in Germany. In Germany, the such things are not quite treated in a good way. They do have a very, very strict rules. So the first thing that happened was the call to the person that was potentially monitored, and let's call her Kate. So Kate, was there anyone that was, there any kind of prompt that was making you agree so that this person is actually watching your desktop? And she said no. This guy has a very, very strong problem, of course, after the whole situation. And such things like this, and to calling people, talking to people, might also help within the investigation. Let's dig in. So 10-10-2-10. Okay, so now let's move to 10-10-2-10. This is this body over here. So I'm going to go to the full screen mode, and I'm going to log on. So this is 10-10-2-10. One more time. And the question is, what is our next trace over here? We're able, of course, to find out the information about what kind of processes are running over here. Is there anything interesting, for example? So we can, of course, start the whole investigation. But let's map the two facts together. Just because this Freddy, potentially, was using the terminal session to this body, there are a couple of things we can check. Well, first of all, we can also, this is an easy thing, remote desktop logs. Second thing, eventually, if there was a remote connection, we can check this file. And this is, as you see, WSMPRV host. And this is the hoster file for the remote connections. But we can also check, I will be back to this. We can also check from the client perspective stuff like cache of the remote desktop session. So remember about one thing. Whenever you go for vacation and you don't take a laptop with you, what can happen? And you are going to the internet cafe and you are like, oh, let me check my emails. Oh, maybe I'm going to connect to home, MSTSC, click, and you are connecting, whatever, through many VPNs, whatever, yes. And the thing is that if you don't run MSTSC/public, you are caching the images from your session to the cache on the certain computer. MSTSC/public, very important switch whenever you were traveling. So what we're gonna do, I'm gonna load the cache. Where the cache is? The cache is in the user's profile because this was user connecting to the certain place. So we got a Freddy Krueger, AppData, local Microsoft, terminal server client, cache. So let's do that. I'm gonna go to cache, open, and then, I was laughing at my husband we are not very romantic because he's about to give me something as a, sign of love, he writes me the cool tool, and it's really like that. This is the second tool that he gave me, so I feel really blessed. You may feel that he doesn't really love me because the tool is really ugly, but he never had a good sense of art. As flat as ironing disk. Let's go, load. And I loaded the cache. I'm going to decode it. So that looks really ugly because it's like nothing really special over here. So what I will do, I'm going to change the decoding. I'm going to load it again. Let me do this like this. And I'm going to change the decoding because this kind of fields, they don't look quite good. So I'm going to change it to the 64 value. This is the resolution that we are controlling in the tool, yes? If you're not the author of the tool, you don't know how to use that. But hopefully now you will know. And I'm sharing this tool on the tools on the website as well. So decode it. And these are the different kinds of blocks that we've got, yes? And we are able to investigate, of course, what kind of stuff hacker saw. We are able, of course, this file has 9 megabytes. We are able to switch into different kinds of components. So let's say 3 megabytes. And we see a couple of things over here like that. The question is, what hacker saw? That looks ugly. I cannot do anything about it. IIS, okay, thank you. So when hacker was connecting to the 10-10-2-10, he saw IIS. So what about changing and having a look at the IIS settings? Is there any kind of website running? Maybe there is. We don't know this yet. We are about to investigate that. Okay, guys, so let's go to this 10-10-2-10 finally view full screen mode. Very good. And let's see if we do have anything special in IIS. So I got here IIS. Very good. We can go to Science, default website. That sounds very, very good. And then we've got some Contoso files. We can check out the content view. And there is basically nothing. We can try to run the website, punk, browse. And then we've got basically some website, well, whatever. So this is something that we've got. And is this really dangerous? Completely not. So we are like, strange. Maybe there is something that is set up within the web services, could be, that someone is using for communication. There's a lot of guessing always. So let's have a look. So what we're gonna do, I'm gonna actually turn on the Microsoft Network Monitor, and I'm going to monitor if there is any kind of connections that are ongoing to our server. It's always a good practice. So new capture, and I'm going to start the monitoring, and let's see what kind of stuff we can see. So this is always a lot of different kinds of monitoring, a lot of stuff that we can have over here. So there is an ongoing traffic. There is a lot of stuff that we've got, lot of stuff. And there is much really that we can see. But sometimes we can see this kind of system engaged in between our client, which is 10.10 to 100. And of course, there is another communication, which is 10.10 to 10 to 100. So domain controller is responding to something. So there is, of course, a lot of analysis that we can take. But apparently, we've got, of course, this kind of communication ongoing. So there is like, it's quite periodic. We can also have a look at this. So we've got 11.04 a.m. and we can also check out if there is some communication also going on within here. We've got another communication type and so on. So this is pretty much like something that is repeating. So this is pretty interesting. We've got also here TLS engaged. So we've got a TLS. This is a query to DC and a TLS response. So TLS means HTTPS. So really strange as well, like some HTTPS engaged, and here we've got it again. So we've got 1.11.17, and we can search for this information further as well. So 1.11.17, and we can search further, and then we've got 1.11.27. So kind of every 10 seconds. We could spend some while on it, yes, to get into conclusions. So we are like, NDPC. That's interesting. Hi, Andy. Okay, I'm monitoring the traffic, not that I'm not. Okay. This is not my PC, by the way. Anyway, so let's have a look what else we've got. So couple of things. We can, of course, see this kind of traffic. We can check out the bindings. This is really interesting. And we've got here binding to HTTPS contoso.com. We can see, of course, how this communication looks like. So is this really something browsing our website? Well, not really. So here comes the story. How we are able to see what kind of processes are responsible for the web communication. And here comes your favorite tool, which is nothing but NetSH. We all love it, specifically when we need to set up the IP addresses. So NetSH has the very interesting context, HTTP. And in this interesting context, we can, of course, run the question mark, what kind of stuff we've got. And we would like to display some information about what is going on. So HTTP show, and we can display this information. And we've got a very good command that is called HTTP show service state. So HTTP, one more time, so show service state. Very good. And that dumps us an information about what kind of requests we've got. So we've got, for example, contoso.com. We've got also a couple of other things, like the on running on a port 5985, the remote management, and so on. So what if we stop IIS? Will this communication be going again? Let's see. So we were like, okay, let's dig in. Let's stop the server. Now the communication will be potentially not going. We can, of course, start the Microsoft Network Monitor again, and we can check out if we've got a pretty much similar situation. So we are, of course, what's that? Okay, let's see, loading parsers. Invalid capture filter, unknown error. Let's see, now it should be fine. So start, good. So basically, this particular traffic We can also verify again after stopping IIS if there is this TLS that is repeating, yes? So we can verify, of course, the whole communication. And there is, you see? It's a little bit more clear right now. So I'm going to enlarge it. So how come that whenever we stop IIS, the communication over HTTPS, it's still going? Who is then responsible for that? And here comes the thing with the architecture of the web server. Because the web server, well, consists of two services. Eventually, and at the end, it's running within the SVC host. But what is very interesting is that web server, it's not the web functionality of the server. What is the web functionality of the server? It is actually the driver running within the kernel mode that is called http.sys. And this is http.sys that is so kind to manage all the incoming traffic and eventually respond. So here comes the question, who then and how we can check is running within this particular traffic? Well, we can go again. Let me stop it because it's going to be a lot of information and the system does not really tell us anything. We can go over here and run the show service state again. Let's see. And now it's going to be a little bit less information. So we've got only the remote management and we've got something that is basically running within the HTTPS that is called pricing. So it's like, and this is on the local server. So strange. What is this? This is not the application that I know. So let's have a look. Here, we've got a correlated process identifiers. 968-2068. Well, this is easy. Okay, so let's have a look. Sorted by the process ID, and then we can search for the 968. Do we have a process like this? Yes, SVC host. We can check out, of course, what kind of services are running over there. And we clearly see that this is WinRM, Windows Remote Management Service. We can also go here to the properties, and then we can go to services, and then we can easily spot the services that are running over here. Okay, so it kind of does not look strange. So let's move forward. We've got 2068. So let's see what kind of stuff is this. 2068. This is run DLL 32.exe. Isn't it pretty interesting? Because whenever we see the run DLL, what does it mean? It means that we are running some DLL. That's it. The whole romanticism is over. Is this a good file? It's very ambivalent file. Yes? It's like, is it not good and it's not bad? It's just a file. And what it does, it helps us to run the DLLs. So effectively, if there is some DLL that, for example, developer wanted to launch within the software somehow, some way, then it's going to be over there. So what is also very nice is that whenever we run the DLL, we run it with so-called export, because we want to call a certain piece of code from the inside of the DLL. And when we have a look what we got over here, we've got actually run DLL32.exe, and we've got, well, I name it like it so it's going to be clear, malware server.dll.dll, and we are running this with the export that is called runcc, whatever that means. DLLs are running like that, and very often whenever you've got malware, it's actually in the form of DLL. So it's going to be launched like that, and then you about to investigate, you've got a very important question in front of you, and now it's time to drink coffee. Because the question is, what this DLL does? What is this DLL doing? How to check for that? Well, here comes the very juicy thing. Because what we can do, we can go, for example, to modules, and we can analyze what kind of module this particular DLL is using. And basically, whenever we've got, of course, stuff like Process Hacker, Process Explorer, both are good, we can search for the stuff that looks weird. Well, the first thing that you already catch, because it's in orange, these files that I'm using are not digitally signed as well. Here, we've got some temporary file, malware server. So what we can do, we can open file location eventually, and we can analyze, copy, what is this? I have no idea. Let's put it in our analysis folder. Is there anything else that we can see? Yes, anything else that really catches our eyes? We can sort by the description, yes? And then we are able to find things that are related, of course, maybe also with this certain DLL. We can also sort by the name. and search for the malware server DLL that is actually launched. It has no description. So what we can do, we can basically open file location, nice, in C Windows, wherever it is. We can, of course, put it over here within the analysis, and then we are about to analyze that stuff. So this is basically how we're able to do that. So the next thing, of course, we can do, we are able to go to the client then. And now if it's communicating with the client, the question is, what kind of stuff it's running on the client? And let me get there. So whenever we go to the client, here we go, the client is coming. This is what was the situation. We are about to also investigate what kind of traffic particularly is running within the client. So which process is communicating with the web server? We can do, of course, the network tracing and so on, but network tracing doesn't give you the process ID. It's always this kind of juicy and geeky thing, how to correlate network traffic with the process ID. It's not easy, but it's kind of simple if we know how to do that. So what we're gonna do? I'm gonna actually, to find what kind of stuff is responsible for communicating with the server, I'm gonna actually run one thing. That's gonna be nothing but Xperf tool. Xperf tool from Windows Performance Analysis Toolkit. This is something that I was mentioning many times, and now it's time to run it. Unfortunately, the command that I'm gonna run, it's pretty long, so I got it saved over here, and then let me just copy it, and I'm gonna explain what it does. It's gonna be a little bit more comfortable for everyone. So I'm gonna paste it. So Xperf, I'm turning it on, and I'm monitoring the process threat, and of course the information that is related with those, plus correlate them with the network trace. Xperf, it's the subject of its own. You can download it for free from the Microsoft webpage. And then this buffer size, min buffers, and so on, I'm just doing this for the safety, from the safety perspective. Because for one of the customers, we've been analyzing the web application, because there was a web application that was hosting 8,000 users, 8,000 people, and this particular application was having this kind of CPU peaks, and they didn't know what's that. So if you run, of course, Xperf, you will, maybe not super clearly, but you are about to you're about to solve the problem, but be careful with one thing. Have a look at my last parameter, file mode circular. What does it mean? It means that whenever you've got a very intensive information source, it can really grow. So it's better to limit yourself, because for this 8,000 people application, only a couple of seconds it took, and our file was already in chunk of 4 gigabytes, like this. Couple of seconds, you turn on monitoring, whoo, and you've got a big file. And we're like, whoa, whoa, this is a lot, yes? And to analyze this, that's a different story. So basically, let me, of course, start this kind of trace. And let me see. Let me see what's that. Oh, okay. Dear ETL, let's see. Okay, network, let me delete it. Mm-hmm. Oh, so strange. Okay, let me do this one more time. Good. It's, oh. What kind of file do we mean? Come on. Let's see. Let's see what is the problem. Okay. Network trace, we've got that. Let me see basically what I've got within the Xperf folder. Mm-hmm. In the worst case, we will do this basically differently. Okay, so let's have a look. We've got here some information. We've got this lock is doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Quite interesting. The file already exists. Let's have a look. Aha, process hacker. That's better. Huh? You see the messages? I love them. The file already exists. Yes, but the file already exists. Ah, that means that I need to turn off the anything that is disturbing the logger, which is, let's see, process hacker. Strange. I love this kind of messages. This is just, yeah. Anyway, so let's have a look. The next thing that I'm going to do, of course, I'm going to... So that wasn't really this file that existed, because that was really a strange message. But anyway, so I'm right now doing this monitoring. And if the communication is ongoing every 10 seconds, we can go pace, and we can stop it to the network ETL trace. And that ETL trace will contain information about combination in between the process and the network trace, yes? So how to filter this file? Because if you want to know, if you want to open the ETL file in the notepad, not recommended, not recommended, unless you want to really read the bushes. It's really not to be readable. So there are two ways how we are able to do that. That depends on your mood today. Either you can use the built-in trace RPT tool, either you can use XPerf again, and this A stands for action. It's going to dump the events to the, and as we see, test.txt file. So let me copy this, and let me, of course, paste it. I'm going to name it, of course, test. And let's dump, of course, the whole thing. And it already dumped it. And now we are about to analyze that particular test.txt file. Let's do this like this, test.txt, and export the stuff to the TCP send file. And I'm going to basically run the find string command, and I'm going to search for the TCP send header. How do we know that? Because if you go, of course, to the certain file, test.txt, open up, this is the XPerf always approach, we can find over here different kinds of headers. And what I will be searching for, so in this particular case, actually, let me search for this header. So in our case, going to be TCP. Mm-hmm. TCP send gives me information about the process ID and remote IP version 4 address. You see this line over here? This is exactly what I want to get. How do we know that? Well, XPerf. There is a very nice book. It's called Inside Windows Debugging. Very fascinating, really. And there are two chapters about XPerf. Recommended, very well explained. Okay, so let me dig in, yes? So TCP send, and then let's export it to TCP send 1. And then we are able to go to TCP send 1, and then we are able to see what kind of communication was running over here. So we've got some l.exe process, and we've got also engaged run DLL file, 3948. And now we can run Process Hacker. Very good. And we can check, of course, this particular DLL is quite interesting. Let's see, 3948. Let's sort it. 39. Here we go. We can go to the properties. And then we've got also information about some two mechanisms that are engaged with communication of each other. So now, really, the fun begins. Because let me go to modules, and let me go at that stage to find anything that is, again, interesting for me. Without explanation, let me export pretty much the same modules. So I got some TMP file. I'm going to open this one, and I'm going to put this to the analysis folder again. And I'm going to also search for this DLL, malwareclient.dll, open file location, and I'm also put this in the certain folder. So what we have captured is the communication on two sides, clients and server. And here comes the question, how we are able to investigate what was going on. So very quickly, let me, of course, introduce you to the what is in the on this DLL world. So, what kind of tools we're going to use? Whoa. There is a plenty of those. One of the tools that I will actually like to discuss with you, it is basically nothing but the bunch of debuggers. So PE Bros, IllSpy, we're going to use those. We're going to use a little bit of debugger. Well, XPerf we already used. EventLog, it's a good place to jump to. FRST, it's a very good thing to analyze your operating system whenever you've got a malware infection. All of those tools are very much engaged into having a look in what is in there. Both executables, DLLs, and different other pieces of code. So, what I'm going to do, I'm going to actually do a small and quick analysis about what kind of stuff we've got, of course, inside that particular code. So we could be actually doing this for hours, literally. Let me begin. But let's, of course, begin how does it work on the client side. So let's be back to this client. So the tool that I'm going to open this stuff with, first of all, I'm going to use Resource Hacker. Resource Hacker is the tool to have a look into the different kinds of, in this particular case, DLLs, different kinds of binaries. And we are able, let me open it, to, of course, open this particular DLL. And we are able to have a look very, very briefly if there is anything interesting in this particular code. And we've got this, this program cannot be run in a DOS mode. That is a clearly sign of an executable code. Can we, for example, export this executable code from this DLL somehow? Of course we can. And now we are going to the really cool areas. We are able to save the resource as a binary file. And then I can, of course, save it as binary or whatever and save. And this binary file, of course, it has its own weight. If you have a look, these two files are pretty much the same. So there is a chance we could use FC to do the file compare, that what I've exported from the memory as a module is pretty much the same as, of course, that binary file. So this is a pretty interesting thing. How we are able to look inside? Well, another tool that is very good to use, it is the PE Browse Pro. PE Browser, PE Browse Pro, there is a bunch of things like that. What we can do with this, we're able to see what kind of code this particular DLL or this particular executable is using. And this is more analysis from the IT pro perspective. This is more like, I'm quite curious. Let's see, let's get into conclusions. I'm going to open file, and I'm going to, of course, I can load here the malware client DLL, why not? And I'm going to open it. And then I'm able, of course, to analyze. It takes a small while. I'm able to analyze what kind of stuff is within this particular DLL. And there are two things, of course, that we can use. It's going to be the native code, well, like, for example, assembler and so on, or it's going to be the .NET code. But chances that it's going to be the .NET code is so-so. That depends, of course, how this malware was written. And what we can have a look at are the DLL exports. And this particular run client export, well, sometimes we call it a function in general, but this, professionally we call it export, has a different kinds of information inside. And now you only not need a coffee, but you need a coffee and two cigarettes at the same time, because the analysis is starting to be really interesting. And don't worry, we will not dig in into something. Don't worry, yes? What we will do, I just want to show you one thing. There is one jump. I'm going to dig in into this jump. And right-click and disassemble. And what kind of stuff we can see over here is that basically we've got the MS Cori DLL. And that clearly indicates that there's going to be some .NET code engaged. So what we can do, instead of this tool, we can run another tool. And another tool, it's called IlSpy. Let me run it. So I'm going to go to, in my case, Tools, IlSpy. Let's run it. This is a free tool that you can download from the internet as well. And I'm going to analyze that particular stuff. I got here some source added, but let me actually add it again so that we can clearly see how to do that. So I'm going to go, in my case, to the C drive and analysis, malwareclient.dll, open, and now we are able to dig in. So, oh, not sorry, not this one. Oh, one more time. Sorry. All files. And then let's take this temp file. It's going to be a little bit more juicy. So what we are doing, we are actually browsing through the code that we were able to dump from the memory. So this is a simply disassembler, we're disassembling the code. And we are watching and browsing through what kind of stuff within this code runs. We've got some resources engaged. We've got some problem. But that particular problem is not to be accessed. It's kind of strange. What kind of stuff we can get, though? We've got this malware client lib, let's see. We've got, of course, some methods over here that are called for within the code. And this is kind of really weird, because this is really beyond the edge of IT pro, but it's very much within the edge of developers, yes? So we are able to investigate one by one any kind of logic that we will find. So this is the answer to the question, what this DLL is doing. So what we can see over here, just a quick look. Remember, we've got some timer we've got 10 seconds period within the network communication. So there is apparently some timer engaged, yes? Okay, so that is self-explanatory. We've got also this kind of run web client method. Why am I going there? Well, you go just everywhere, and then you try to build a logic on the top of it. And then we are using something that is called client.ini. And this is kind of awkward, because what's the client.ini then? Well, and where is the client.ini? Of course, we could use search, but I can tell you, because of course I know, we could use search, it's not very attractive. We've got here client.ini, and if we edit this, we've got, connection is happening to the pricing app. Okay, so this is clearly what we saw. And here we've got the different kinds of methods that we are calling for that apparently mean something. Let's see what kind of stuff we've got. We've got, of course, this method over here, and we can check what is inside. Well, this is the information about the code, yes? So we can browse through different kinds of things, what kind of stuff we are actually loading. We've got this check CC, for example, and we've got the functions like, we've got the function like get key from server, decrypt assembly. So strange. Maybe this is the assembly, whatever, the decrypt function, maybe this is the one that we are actually using to decrypt the problem. So if something on the server side happens, this client side will treat it as, decrypted key came, case of a crypto locker, yes? Decryption key came, and then we are able to decrypt certain data. So the next thing, of course, that we can check, we can see like what kind of get key from server. We've got some from base 64 string, okay, could be. We can also check what is in the decrypt assembly, yes? And then we are able, of course, to see that we are decrypting some keys. We can see this deck key, whatever, decrypt rest, what is inside. And we can get into the conclusions very, very slowly that we are actually using some decryption with some algorithm and so on to the resource that is called problem. Okay, so how we are able, and this is pretty interesting, how we are able to call for the certain situation, to make some certain situation to happen so that we are able to decrypt this assembly. Of course, there is one thing that is good and bad at the same time. As long as you got a backup, this is actually good. I can tell you that on the server side, there is this trigger thing. And whenever, of course, the decryption key comes from the server, the client will get it and decrypt something. What's going to happen? It's going to be pretty interesting. And let me actually show you the whole scenario. So I'm going to go to this particularly node server. And this particular server, let me go to the full screen mode. I'm going to do like this, restart. And this was actually this case is built on real case. Imagine that one beautiful day, you come to the infrastructure and the clients are starting the computers, and we've got stuff like this in 1,000 computers. And this is actually what this malware did. It added one registry key, pending renames. And pending renames in the operating system, it's nothing but renaming the operating system files during the reboot. So here comes the thing, how we are able to get this information, of course, extracted. What's going to happen? I don't know. So I told you that killing a certain executable is a bad idea, right? So let's try it, but in the controlled conditions. So what I'm going to do, let me go to the tools. We can check, of course, this run DLL is 3948, and what I'm going to do, I'm going to run the Andrew Richards tool, which is prots dump, and minus T, so on the termination, make a dump, and minus MA, run DLL. We can put it, of course, by the name, or we can put the 3948, like this. And when the process is terminated, make me a dump. So let me trigger it. So this is, of course, the finalization of the story. We could be analyzing this for a long, long time, but whenever we go to this DC, within the C drive, there is the file trigger.ini. How we are able to get this information? After the quite longer analysis of these files. As we did before, we saw client.ini, here we're going to saw the same stuff, trigger.ini. What I will do, basically, I'm going to change it from 0 to 1. And what's going to happen on the site, on the left side, so change it to 1, is that this particular malware will drop me a file. So I save it to 1. These queries are going. And let's see, of course, here we go. Process terminated, process exited, but we've got a dump. And that particular dump, we are about to analyze. And the analysis is actually relatively simple. So let's have a look. We go to desktop. We've got, of course, in our case, it was in a tools folder. So tools, let's go to tools. And we've got this run DLL that was created. This is basically this one. And I'm going to go to the opening, the debugger. So let's do that. And now we are able to see, of course, what kind of stuff we can check. So first of all, what I will do, I'm going to load the .NET library. Load by, and then it's SOS CLR. And then it should be, everything should be fine. So right now we are still downloading symbols that we are searching for, but let's see, of course, this process should be over in a moment. Very good, okay. Now we are able, of course, to load this library. Now we're gonna dump the domain. Dump the domain command, of course, domain, allows us to dump most of the, all of the DLLs that we've got running over here. And one of the DLLs is actually this problem. So I got here basically problem listed. So what we can do, we can also dump the assembly from the problem. Well, the easiest way to do this is to actually click on this file. Let's click on this. And then we've got, of course, this kind of particular address over here. And what we are able to do, we are able to save the module. So let's do this, save module within the debugger. And I'm going to, of course, specify where the modules should be saved. Yes, so this is the address that I've got of the module, and then I'm going to save it in the C tools as problem1.dll. And that particular module, let's see, should be already saved. Let's see, oh, okay, this is not the, let's see. Where is this? Should be fine. Momento. Save. Save module. This is actually correct, yes? So save module. Let me quickly check, because this is something that I will need to verify. So this is... I actually gave the good address, basically. Yes. Yeah. Let's do that. Exactly. Sorry. Now it's better. Okay, very good. Good. I see. Thank you. You are not sleeping. It's very good. So what I will do... in IllSpy, I'm going to open this particular module, and I'm going to load it from, in my case, it was in the tools folder, and I'm going to verify what kind of piece of code was this. So this is this problem that was encrypted. It got decrypted because it got launched. It got to the memory. I made a dump, and I got the whole thing with me right now. Yay. I got the red cheeks. If you are sitting in the front row, probably you see that. Anyway. Sorry. So let's dig in. We've got here, of course, a piece of malware, and I got a very positive name that is called Destroyer. And we are able to find out what kind of stuff is going on over here. And we have clearly found a reason and found the answer why our workstations were blue screening. Because someone added a registry entry pending renames. You have got a cigarette? So this is how we are able to analyze that DLL. It's not easy, I know, but it's kind of cool, and it allows us to at least get the approach. Next time you're going to be wondering, what's this? What is this doing? Here we go. Yeah? Okay, guys. Let's move along. The last thing, of course, that I want to show you, it's related with a tiny, tiny thing. And that tiny particular thing, let me dig in, it is, oh, one more time, let me dig in to the my stuff. It's going to be basically related to, launching the different kinds of stuff against the event log. And I call it nom 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 nom, because we're going to be a little bit like this. So how the file, how the tools, of course, are working with against the event log? Let's dig in. So if eventually, full screen mode, the hacker is about to edit the event logs, first of all, what I will do, I'm going to open up the event logs, and I got here application log. That particular application log, it's sorted. I got some new events, of course. It's sorted by the time. So we can go to the top. On the top, we've got a fresh events, yes? I got some warning and a couple of other things. So I have, this is something that is sorted, of course, by the time. So the question is, can we at some point delete different kinds of events? Like, for example, I got this warning from 7 p.m. Maybe we could pick some time. So this is the 29th. Let's say I got 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. What about deleting events from 6 a.m. on 29th? Let's do that. So this is the tool that I was talking about. We were writing this for the, as I said, a pretty long time. EVTX, and it's called EVTX Eater. Looks like this. I was really stubborn on this tool being pink because, I mean, it's pretty cute, I think. Anyway, what, of course, the date we need to change, we'll need to change it to 29th and 29th, and we are editing the application log. And in our case, the time that we were thinking about was actually to remove the events from 6 a.m. to, let's say, 7 a.m. because we want to remove all of the 6 a.m. events. So we're going to do it like that. And normally when the raccoon bites you, you get rabies. But in this case, raccoon does not give you rabies, but it gives you a pleasure in removing the certain types of events from the event logs. And to write the tool is kind of difficult because there's a lot of signatures engaged, but eventually doable. So let's bite. And let's refresh the log. And let's see if the events were removed. So this is the 28th, and apparently, so this is the PM time, so let's go to the AM time, and apparently, sad, so sad, we don't have any more events in between. So what I'm saying, and what is the summary of the presentation? That, first of all, I mean, the conclusion is simple, log centralization, of course, because if you've got a situation like this, hacker can be always smarter. And then you come to the field, and you can be smarter. And the hacker can be smarter. And there's always this ongoing thing, yes? How can you prevent this? Because hacker was really smart right now. Log centralization. Do we have that implemented? You don't need to answer. But think about it, because whenever these tools are coming, we are not sharing this tool with anyone. Yes, the reason why it's like that is because it's really dangerous. And it violates clearly the logic of the very important, one of the most important files in the operating system. But my goal is very simple, to show you that, first of all, education within the searching for tracing in Windows is always needed, always helpful. One thing that Hacken can be always one step farther, but that's why we've got books. That's why we've got conferences like this, to pick these tiny things that are useful for us, and then maybe you're going to be smarter than the hacker. And then you win. So CSI game, as in the episodes, it's always ongoing. These are the bad guys winning, the good guys winning. But of course, the conclusion is very, very simple. Whenever you're going to be analyzing data, put it aside. Whenever you feel that something is wrong, you know how to start the investigation. I shared with you a bunch of scripts. You got a bunch of tools. You are able to search for the information in the operating system. Another thing, of course, if you need any kind of advice from the legal resources, that doesn't hurt, and sometimes it's even needed. And whenever we are thinking, of course, about searching information within the different kinds of events, what is important is that our reaction should be always automatic. If we don't have the incident response set up in the form of any kind of procedures in the company, how else, if not totally not, we're able to react to the situations that are violating our privacy and security. So that's all about it. Thank you so much for coming in the morning. I hope you enjoy it. Of course, last request, if you could fill up the evaluations, it would be so great. And if you have any questions, I'm waiting patiently for you over here, and enjoy the rest of the day. Thank you so much.